Emma's cloudless blue eyes fixed somewhere above Adelaide. She didn't move, didn't laugh, didn't turn and tell Adelaide she was only teasing her. The horrifying truth dropped into Adelaide's heart, panic exploding into grief and rage that tore her apart. The grief and rage never let go over the next few months. The only thing that kept the emotions from ripping Adelaide apart completely was the resolve hardening into iron that she must do something, anything, to stop this from happening again. Not just for Emma, but also for the orange-capped boy, the bent-backed woman, and the dozen others who had died because King Ganelon and his son had failed to protect them. Well, Adelaide would protect them. One way or another, the time to help her people had come. That's a quote from The Gift of Dragons by Rachel A. Greco. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. And of course, a special thank you to all of my Patreon members for your continued support. Today, I am really thrilled to be able to bring you another author interview. I know I say this all the time, but I really love when I get the chance to do this. I love being able to read a book and then actually talk to the author and pick their brain about it and find out about their process. It's just so much fun. So today, we are going to be talking about The Gift of Dragons. This is a brand new book that just came out on May 12th, and I highly recommend it. And this is by Rachel A. Greco. Well, welcome to YA Book Chat, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited to join you.
I'm glad you're here. Like I said, I love getting a chance to have authors on and just chat with them. I think it's so much fun. Well, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself to get us started?
I grew up on the plains of Amarillo, Texas, with all the cattle and the cowboys. I could smell the feedlots from miles away, so that was not a lovely smell. But now I'm surrounded by beautiful trees in North Carolina, which I love. And I grew up reading books and wanting to write. And when I'm not reading or writing, I enjoy kayaking, hiking, camping, gardening, pretty much anything outdoors that I can do.
Yes, it sounds like you are a very outdoorsy person. I am as well. I love it. My family loves to go camping and hiking and to the beach. You mentioned kayaking. That is not my thing though. I've never been in a kayak, but we went camping last summer and they had canoes and it was the first time I'd ever been in a canoe. And I just about lost it. I was so scared. I was like, we were literally out in the canoe for like 5 minutes. And I was like, go back. I'm done. I can't take this anymore. Like my husband and my 11-year-old were in heaven and my 8-year-old and I were petrified. So one of those.
Were you like on a lake or a river?
We were on a lake. Yeah. So, I mean, it was fine. It was, you know, perfectly safe. There wasn't anything bad swimming in the lake. I think it was just because it was so wobbly and I'm just not used to that. And I just don't like the feeling of like feeling out of control and that at any moment, even though I know how to swim, it would be fine. I just didn't, you know, like the feeling that at any moment the whole thing could tip over and I could fall into the water.
So, thankfully, I've never fallen out of a kayak.
That's good. I've heard those are actually easier than canoes.
Yeah, I like them better, but I feel like you are closer to the water, like lower down. So
no, that's not going to happen then. Okay, I'm good. I'm going to stick to the safer stuff. Why don't you tell everyone what The Gift of Dragons is about?
Yeah, so Gift is about a peasant girl, Adelaide, who is trying to overthrow the king and prince because they didn't protect her or her sister or her town from the northern country when they attacked. In fact, her sister was murdered by people from this attacking country. So when Prince Elias shows up on Adelaide's door, claiming that the legendary dragons exist and need help, Adelaide must decide where her true allegiance lies before the kingdom shatters.
It's a very fun and intriguing story. When I first read the description, I was like, ooh, dragons. This is right up my alley. This is going to be great. A girl whose sister has been killed. And so she's like seeking revenge. And of course, then she ends up with him together. So I was like, ooh, this is probably going to be an enemies to lovers trope, which I love. That's probably my favorite one. And so I knew from the start, I was like, this is going to be a good one. This is going to be one I can sink my teeth into. So, and it is, it's a great one. Why don't you talk to me about where the idea for the story came from and kind of how it developed?
Yeah, I actually don't remember where the idea originated. But I did always want to have this idea of like a peasant girl trying to overthrow the king of the country and the king pursuing her constantly, even though she's continuing to, you know, flee from him and not treat him well. But he's continuing to pursue her. And at one point I was like, oh, I could just call it Pursued. But I'm glad it didn't end up with that title. And actually, the dragons weren't even in the story at the beginning at all. I just remember actually sitting in my dorm room in college when I was supposed to probably be, you know, writing a paper or doing homework or something. And I just had this idea like, oh, dragons, like I should put dragons in the story. Like, why not? Everyone loves dragons. And I love writing about dragons. So I'm so glad that I had that idea, and because now I can't imagine the story without it, it would probably be a lot more boring and no one would probably want to read it without them. So I'm glad I had that
idea. Yeah. The dragons are definitely a great addition to it, and they really bring a lot of interest to the story and make it more intriguing for sure, especially because there's kind of a secret involving the dragons and what has happened with them. And so it keeps you guessing, keeps you on your toes. I do have to tell you something funny. Okay. When I was reading this, and even just hearing your description of this and how Elias just like is in constant pursuit of Adelaide, right? And he's following her. And all I could keep thinking of was when I was in college, well, I should back up. When I was in high school, there was a guy who really liked me a lot, and he would ask me out all the time, and he just wasn't my type. And I was like, no, you know, and then we ended up going to the same college, and it was this whole thing. And I was like, there are a ton of other girls here now. We're at college, like go experiment, find somebody else. So it was just funny because I'm reading this, your book about how Elias just keeps following her and keeps going after her. And then the whole thing that he tells her parents when he goes to her house, I was like all I could think about was this experience that I had in high school and college. It was just making me laugh.
Well, I hope I didn't want it to be like a creepy thing.
No, it you wasn't know, creepy.
Reasons. Yeah.
No, he does. He does. And that is very clear. So it was not creepy at all. It just brought that up in my memory. So, but no, it's not creepy at all.
And the guy stopped pursuing you, I take it.
He did. He found someone else. And I was like, oh, good. I'm glad. Up. I moved on.
Good.
So you just said that you started writing this in college. And when I read the acknowledgments at the end of the book, it appeared as if this was actually a college thesis for you. So how did it go from a college paper, college thesis, to turning into being a published novel?
Yeah, it actually started before. So I had actually written it before the college thesis part. So I wrote it like freshman year. I don't actually remember when it was. And then, so I had finished it. And then when I was in college and I had changed my major to English, I had heard some friends and other classmates saying, oh, you can work on a novel with a professor for your senior thesis. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. I finished, you know, I had this manuscript of gift and I really needed to edit it. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. So we met once a week, I think, or twice a week. And she just helped me edit it. And even she had her son read it, and he was a high schooler. So that was perfect because he's like the right age, you know, target audience. And actually had some good feedback kind of about the ending and the sequel and stuff. So it was really helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. And yeah, how perfect that she had a teenage son that could read it for you.
I know. And he liked it. I was like,
which is great, right? Makes you feel validated.
Exactly. And it was really bad back then. Early drafts, like second draft.
It's okay. Everybody knows like the first couple drafts are never good, right? But you got to wade through the muck to get to the good stuff. So
exactly.
When did you decide to publish it?
Well, I always wanted to publish it. So I edited it for, it feels like forever. Like that's the hardest part for me is knowing, okay, now it's ready. It's ready to be done. You know, it's like your baby and you want it to be perfect and all ready, but it's never going to be perfect. So, but finally I was like, okay, it's ready enough. And I sent it out to some agents and I never, you know, heard positive things, like no one accepted it. And I was like, well, I really think this is still a good story to tell, like with the themes and of forgiveness and mercy and how Adelaide grows over the course of the book. I still wanted to get it out to readers. And so I'd heard about this publishing company called Atmosphere Press, which is a hybrid publisher. So that means you pay them up front and then they don't take any royalties out of what you make.
Okay.
And so I sent them the book. I was just like, well, I'll just send it to them and see what they think. I wasn't really expecting much. And so they liked it and God provided the money. And so it just went from there. That's I still great. Would love to be traditionally published one day, but I think this was a good fit for the gift of dragons. So.
Yeah. And it takes a long time, you know, sometimes like there's a children's book that we have and it's hilarious. Like it's ingenious. It's called The Day the Crayons Quit. And
oh, I love that book.
Right. Like it's fantastic. It's so fun. And I read an interview that Drew DeWalt, the author, gave, and he talked about how it took him 6 years to get that published traditionally. Like he had an agent. And even with that, it took 6 years for that to get published. And I was like, but this book is ingenious and it's hilarious, you know? So, I mean, it just kind of shows you how difficult the publishing industry is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And everyone's story is different. And I've heard even that J.K. Rowling's book Harry Potter wouldn't have even been published if not for like the daughter saying, please publish this. Like it's amazing. So it's just
so crazy,
weird. And it does take a long time and you just have to be patient as a writer.
Yeah.
And persistent, very persistent.
Which I can imagine is probably one of the really hard parts about it.
It can be, yeah, it can be really discouraging.
Yeah. Well, what does it feel like to have your first young adult novel being published?
Yeah, it's so like, I'm feeling all the feels, like super excited and terrified, you know, that people are going to hate it. And I'm sure some will. That's just, you know,
you can't please everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then of course, very overwhelmed, but very excited. It's still hard to believe that this is happening because it's been a dream of mine since I was a child.
That's really cool. It's a great when you can, you know, you have a dream like that and then you're able to see it fulfilled, even if it takes a long time, because lots of stuff takes a long time just to be able to see it fulfilled like that. It's really amazing. So it's exciting. So let's talk about the book itself and about the world building. I love this world, Clanhoon, that you have built. It's beautiful. I love the map. I'm a big map person. Anybody who listens to my podcast can tell you that because I say it all the time. But I love the map. Like it's beautiful. It's really helpful. It's a great, you know, visual representation to go along with the story. So what were kind of the elements of this world of Clinhoon that kind of that you knew from the start that you needed or you wanted to have? Because we have, you know, the mountain areas and all the rivers and there's some islands and then the crystal caverns, which are amazing. I love the crystal caverns. So what, you know, what did you kind of know you wanted to have at the beginning and versus like what kind of developed as you wrote it?
I love world building. It's probably one of my favorite parts of being a fantasy writer because you can just let your imagination explode and, you know, go crazy with it. So that was very fun. I always knew I wanted mountains because it's hard for me to imagine a world without mountains. And even because dragons, and I just feel like dragons and mountains go well together. You can't really mm-hmm. have one without the other, at least these kinds of dragons. So I wanted those. And I always visualized Adelaide's house being by a river. I don't really know why, but I just wanted her there. So I had that. And I had pictured Dalian, which is the king's city where mm-hmm. King Ganelon and his son, Prince Elias, live. I always had pictured that as on a cliff overlooking the ocean in the castle, you know, right there on the mm-hmm. cliff, very well defended area. So, but then the rest of it just came about as I was writing, like the crystal caverns, which you mentioned, and the Tancred Forest. But I also, I don't know if this is kind of connected to world building, but also the poet, there are some poetry and songs in the story. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted those in there just to help create this sense of history and, you know, that this country has existed for a long time. So I always wanted that, but those were a little tricky to write because I'm not a natural poet or rhymer. So I did spend quite a bit of time polishing those and getting those right.
I loved that those were in there. It gives it kind of like a, you know, Hobbit and Lord of the Rings type feel, because that's part of those books and that world as well. And in The Witcher, I don't know if you've seen The Witcher, the TV show, but like there's some of that, there's a bard who is in it and he does that. And I just think having that element where you've got like the songs and the poems to talk about the world and what it's been like, you know, is like and was like before hundreds of years ago, it just really enhances the story. It gives the reader such a fantastic image of not just what the world is like presently in the story that we're reading, but what it was like previously, you know, and it just kind of solidifies everything and makes it just whole and complete. And it's fun to read that, at least for me. Like I enjoy reading the poems and the song, you know, the songs. And it also feels like, I don't know how to describe it. I'm gonna use the word cozy because I can't think of anything else right now. But it gives it kind of like a cozy, like comforting type feeling, as if like you're in one of these towns, little towns, and in the pub, and it's this like small atmosphere, and there's, you know, somebody starts singing and this, and it's just like a welcoming kind of feeling too for the book, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. And that's kind of what I was going for. And even with, you know, cause I love Lord of the Rings and what you mm-hmm. mentioned and those books. So I was always kind of going for that feel, that old history. I'm like, if it's a true yeah. fantasy book, it has to have these songs and poems.
Did you have to do any research for the book? And specifically, I'm thinking maybe about like a serf system with lords and peasants, because in this world, that is a lot of what we see happening. We have the king and his son, the prince, who, you know, obviously are the ultimate rulers over the kingdom. But then each of these cities within the kingdom have like a lord who is over the city and is supposed to at least take care of it. But there are, you know, all the villagers who live there, but a lot of them are peasants and are very poor and are struggling to be able to even, you know, get food and clothing and the things that they need. So did you, going into this, do any research on that kind of system?
I didn't research the whole serf system very much because I kind of had an idea in my head how I already wanted it to be for my world, how I wanted it to work. But I did research quite a few other things, like just how did people live back then in the Middle Ages, and what did their houses look like? What does ale taste like, and what is it made from? And even how did they fish? And I actually researched hawks a lot because Adelaide, the main character, has a hawk named Seer who goes with her on all these, her journeys. And so that was fun. I got to watch a lot of videos of hawks hunting and what they sound like. And one of the things I enjoyed researching was, because there's a scene in the book about horses and the different kinds at that time period. So that was fun. I got to research different kinds of horses, specifically in the Middle Ages. And I love horses. So that was great.
That's cool. I love horses as well. They're just such beautiful, majestic creatures, like nothing else, you know?
I like live vicariously through my characters who have horses because I wish I had one.
Like, don't we all? You know what's crazy is actually where I live, a lot of people do have horses. And I'm just like, is this like, this is just normal for you? Like you have horses. People down here just have horses. Like it's like nothing. It's like nothing. Whereas I'm like, you don't even live on a farm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's just me, my northern brain coming from, you know, living in a different state where the only time we, you know, horses were like, they were on a farm and that's where they were. They were not in people's backyards. So
our neighbors have 2 horses, I think. And I'm like, oh, where's mine?
It's right here in Clinhoon.
Yes, exactly. Star Flare.
I love Seer. Also the hawk. I think that that was a very, okay, it fit this world really well. And it fit Adelaide's personality. Like I felt like if she were gonna have a pet of sorts, you know, and an animal who came to her and she nursed it back to her, it would be a hawk, like, cause she's fierce, you know? And so it would have to be a hawk to go along with her personality. I just felt like it worked really well. And it was great having Seer throughout the book and throughout the whole story. And just as kind of constant companion for her, because, well, I should say constant companion who she wants with her, cause she's got Elias, but she doesn't always want him there. So
right. Yes, very true. Very true.
And Seer can be like a comfort to her too, because, you know, she did find him with her sister, and her sister was the one who encouraged her to keep him and, you know, take care of him. And so it's like, she carries kind of like a part of her sister with her too.
That's so sweet. I don't think I had noticed her like that part before, but yeah, that's true. Very true. He means a lot to her.
He does. Well, let's talk about Adelaide a bit more. She is really driven by the loss of her sister, and she's got this, you know, fire inside of her, kind of wanting revenge for her sister's death because she feels like the king and the prince did nothing to stop the attack that came from Gindelad, and they didn't receive any aid from the king and the prince afterwards. And so all these people were killed and then the king and the prince did nothing. So she's bent on revenge. And it's what drives her, you know, on this quest. But then, you know, she changes over the course of the book and she really develops a lot from point A to point B. She starts looking at things differently. She looks at Elias differently. You know, as you mentioned earlier, we have the themes of forgiveness and mercy in the book, which we see a lot through Adelaide as she changes. So what was it like developing her character and kind of taking her from point A to point B in the story?
So Adelaide was a tricky character to write because she is so fierce, like you said, and she is dealing with a lot, and she has a lot of rage and sorrow and all this, these strong emotions pent up inside of her. So it was tricky getting the reader to empathize with her. And I had a few early readers like saying, I can't really empathize with Adelaide. So I did have to rewrite a lot of the beginning to show why she's this way, to have the reader see her sister die, because that actually didn't happen till later in the book. So I moved it up and just so that they would realize this is why she has all these strong emotions and why she is the way she is. So it was tricky getting her to the end, but I'm glad you saw the growth, because as a writer, I feel like, and being super close to the story, I never know if what I really want to accomplish has really happened. So that's really encouraging that you saw that growth, because that is what I was aiming for, is her to grow and get over some of this hurt and pain and heal from it.
Yeah. And she definitely does, you know, and I mean, losing a sibling, I can only imagine what that's like, but you know, I haven't had that, but I have definitely had the loss of very close family members, and it's very difficult and it takes a long time to get over. And especially in a situation like what Adelaide is in, where it was an attack from this other country. And then she feels like the people who were supposed to protect her and her family and help her didn't, and they did nothing. And so, yeah, her grief just kind of turns into this rage, and like, I needed to fight. I need to do something to get rid of this. But then, you know, she learns more things as she goes on her trip and spends time with Elias. And so that helps change her. And I think it's important, because we all kind of need that, you know, like we need to have our eyes opened at times to see things from other people's perspectives to help us change how we are.
Right. And I do think I personally sometimes deal with emotions the wrong way, you know, like either run from them or let them consume me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that comes at my characters a lot, you know, she's not really dealing with her emotions the right way, and there's consequences. And so I think, you know, part of me struggling with how I deal with my emotions, I work through that sometimes through my characters. So they have to suffer along with me through the hard stuff.
It's a worthy cause. It's a good way to do it, though. I mean, it's probably cathartic for you, right? Like, that's how you're able to get it out and express those emotions, is through your character.
And sometimes I don't even notice till after. I'm like, oh, actually I do that too. Or that's why she's like this, because I have that personality trait, or that's how I deal with my emotions. So it doesn't, being an author definitely teaches you also more about yourself.
Sometimes being a reader does too. I remember reading a book once, and I was reading this particular character and was like, oh my gosh, I'm totally like this. This is what I do. Like, this is not okay. I have to put, like, it just opened my eyes, and I was like, oh man, that's what I do. Am I like this? I don't want to be like that, you know? So it's very eye-opening sometimes. Let's talk about Elias too. Okay. Prince Elias. So Adelaide is driven by her grief and her anger and wanting revenge, but Elias is also very driven, but he's kind of driven by desperation. So, you know, he wants to save the dragons. He needs somebody to help him, and he's chosen her to help him on his quest with saving the dragons. And he has a different motivation, you know, but yet somehow he's driven by desperation. She's like anger and rage, but they end up coming together and then have to end up journeying together. So what was it like, you know, kind of entwining these two personalities and writing their enemies to lovers storyline?
It was a lot of fun to kind of like push their buttons. Poor Elias, he has to deal with a lot from Adelaide, and you know, he grows too in some ways, because he gets angry and he has to, you know, try to force himself to be patient with her and calm down and, you know, just be persistent. And so I enjoyed watching them and pushing them out of themselves as they were around each other. And also just, it was fun having them, you know, opening up to each other. I think at one point there's a scene with Elias singing a song, of course, because he's Elias and that's what he does. And then Adelaide is like, or maybe he's talking about the ocean. I think actually he's talking about the ocean, and she's never seen the ocean. And she's just like beeping at him like, whoa, that sounds so amazing. It's just like having these scenes, you know, where they start to realize, especially Adelaide, that, oh, Prince Elias is a human. He's a person, and he's not this evil, wicked ruler that I thought he was. So it was really fun to have those moments and to write them in there. And also the misunderstandings, you know, that Adelaide doesn't mm-hmm. know everything that's going on. And those are some of my favorite scenes to write and to read now too.
I love the scene when he takes her to the Crystal Caverns and they're exploring that together. And he's explaining, you know, different things about dragons to her. And she's just like kind of taking it all in and didn't realize, you know, a lot of these things. And it's a really good, it's like a really special kind of scene because it's one of those things where you see a connection because it's something that's really important to him. And she's finally starting to pull in a little bit. And so it's a good connecting moment for them. I think that's one of my favorite scenes in the book.
Oh, good. It was fun to write.
Now, I do have to say, though, this book didn't end how I thought it was going to. Like, I didn't see that coming. I was surprised. I went, wait, what? Did that just happen? Wait, what? No. I was like, but I wanted, no. So it was just one of those endings. It surprised me. And so did you, had that always been kind of like your planned ending or did that change as you were writing the book?
It always stayed the same, but I will just let you know and listeners know that there is a sequel. So there's hope. But I won't say more than that. But yes, I had always had the ending in mind because I'm definitely more of a plotter than a pantser. And I just like to know where the story's going. That way I can, you know, put the little cues in, the little hints, which doesn't mean that the story will never change because it does a lot. And this story changed a lot.
Speaking of the sequel, now I know this one just came out, so you can't, you know, really say anything. I mean, this was just released a few days ago. It hasn't been that long, but I'm just curious, are we going to see more of the dragons and their world and like where they live in the sequel?
Yes, there are definitely a lot more dragons in the sequel.
Okay.
So fantastic. Get to experience all of that.
Awesome. That makes me happy. I always, the more dragons, the better. Like that's what I think.
Yes, I agree. It was fun to explore different personalities and get to know them a little better.
Oh, I'm so excited now. I hadn't even thought about it that way, but now that you say that, that makes a lot of sense considering what I read in this one. Okay, good. All right. Well, why don't you tell everybody where they can purchase The Gift of Dragons and maybe about your website and any social media?
Yes, you can purchase The Gift of Dragons from my website. I have links to Amazon, Barnes and Noble, my Etsy shop, which if you buy it from my Etsy shop, then readers will get a signed copy and a bookmark. And my website is rachelagreco.com. And I'm also on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. And my handle is @RachelAGrecoAuthor.
And I will put links to everything in the show notes for today so you guys can check that out. Check out Rachel's website, see what she's up to, purchase The Gift of Dragons because it really is a fun fantasy story. And yeah, of course, then if you love dragons, you're going to love this story. So you should definitely give it a try. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Rachel. This has been so much fun. And I'm really glad that we had the chance to talk about this book.
Yeah, thank you so much again for having me. It's been such a delight.
You're welcome. I've really enjoyed it. Good. I'm glad. And thank you to all of you, my listeners, for continuing to listening. And we will chat again soon. Today's episode featured the book, The Gift of Dragons by Rachel A. Greco. A special thank you to Rachel herself for coming on and chatting with me today. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram and Facebook. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so you get your episodes as soon as they are available. And have you checked out the YA Book Chat Patreon page yet? You should. There are lots of great benefits available to Patreon members. YA Book Chat was created by, is hosted and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.